Thank you all very much for
welcome
supporting.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Terry. On today's show, Kevin H. Sharp, Gene Roach, and Lenny Foster join host Craig Lubo to discuss the ongoing movement to free Leonard Peltier, an American Indian activist and mainstay member of the American Indian Movement. Following a controversial trial, he was convicted of aiding and abetting murder and has been imprisoned since 1977 for a shooting on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. He's viewed as a long-serving political prisoner. Native American activist Leonard Peltier has been imprisoned for over 44 years. He has always maintained his innocence. Leonard Peltier will not be eligible for parole again until 2024. His lawyers have submitted a new petition for clemency. President Biden must grant Leonard Peltier clemency on humanitarian grounds and as a matter of justice. All three of our guests served on a workshop panel at a virtual Amnesty International event in the fall of 2021. This episode airs during KKFI's Winter Pledge Fund Drive. Please help support KKFI and keep shows like this on the air with your generous contribution. You can consider volunteering at the studio, too. It's easy to dial 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901. And talk to a friendly volunteer phone operator. Listeners can also pledge at our website, kkfi.org. We have a champion this hour. The first $100 we receive will be matched by the Harbin Family Foundation, True Champions. They'll match the first $100 we get this hour. Please call us now. On Jaws of Justice, we examine how to find justice in our society. Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are. Now, our show.
Let me, since we're getting started a little bit late, might be a little bit easier if I just give each of you a few minutes to, about 1 minute each, to introduce yourselves. Kevin, let me have you start, and I will tell the audience that you were the attorney representing Leonard Peltier at one point, and you were appointed as a district court judge. And then you retired. So let me have you fill in the gaps.
Okay. Well, hang on. Most of that was not correct.
Oh.
Sorry. No, I didn't take up Leonard's case until after I left the bench. So I did not know Leonard, nor was I familiar with his story before I took the bench. I was just a lawyer practicing in Tennessee, then was appointed by President Obama, resigned. I didn't retire. I resigned in part over my issues with the criminal justice system and mandatory minimums. That's when someone sent me Leonard's file. I can tell that story in about a minute.
All right. And Lenny, let me have you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. My name is Lenny Foster. I'm from St. Michael's, Arizona. And I've been Leonard Peltier's spiritual advisor for 37 years. And I've known him for over 50 years. And I Sundance with him over 50 years ago at Crow Dog's Paradise, Rosebud, South Dakota, knowing to be a revered elder, a spiritual man. He's a very genuine and honest person. He's a talented artist, a painter, and my duties, responsibility for him as a spiritual advisor was to provide him with the cleansing and purification ceremonies, the sweat lodge ceremonies, and pray with the pipe. And those ways are very important for a man's sanity and humanity while they're in prison. And it was my duty and responsibility to provide them with spiritual wellness, spiritual health, spiritual strength, and spiritual protection. And those were done through the prayers and the songs through the sweat lodge ceremonies.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Jean Roach. I'm from the Cheyenne River City Tribe. I'm a survivor of the Ogallala 1975 shootout where three people were killed. Right now, I'm the co-director of the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. We've been pushing very hard to get the story out. All the injustice involved with it has been a continuation of genocide that our nations have suffered for years. And this is just a continued attack on our people that started at first contact. It's escalated. We live in South Dakota, and this mentality is still prevalent among the law enforcement against the Native American people here in South Dakota.
Okay. And Lenny, you were from South Dakota, from Arizona.
Yes, sir.
And were you, you're involved in Native American stuff. Were you from a reservation too?
I'm from the Navajo Reservation in Northeast Arizona. I'm a Dene, a Navajo.
All right.
As I said, I've been Leonard Peltier's spiritual advisor for over 37 years.
Okay. And Jane, you referred to the shootout at Ogallala, South Dakota. And is that the same, is that where the Pine Ridge Reservation was, or is that separate?
No, that's located within the boundaries of the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation.
All right. So let me, which I think maybe Jean might be the best one, but the others can chime in. Give us a little bit of background about the shootout and what gave rise to it. I do see in notes that it was in 1975. Is that correct?
Yes. I was 14 years old at the time. But during that time period, you know, Wounded Knee was going on. The American Indian Movement was going real, you know, they were pretty strong at that point. And during that time, they called the Reign of Terror, is like since Wounded Knee 73 to 75, which is a, you know, when we were there, Leonard was asked by the elders to come and protect people, because anybody that was doing a sweat lodge, a ceremony, or anything related to American Indian Movement were targets at that time. We had over 60 people that were killed, and their murders were never investigated. So this, basically the time period was the law of the gun. So people were surviving. You never knew when you were going to be attacked because so many people were being killed, ran over, shot, you know, you name it. It was called the Reign of Terror for a reason. And that's also a continuation, like I say, you know, when the 7th Cavalry got beat in the Battle of Greasy Grass where Custer, you know, fell. That continued all the way up to Standing Rock, killed Sitting Bull, all the way down to the Wounded Knee Massacre of 1890. So the mentality of the 7th Cavalry continues. And whatever reason that, you know, they're scared of our people, when we're in prayer, they attack us all the time. And that's basically what happened in Ogallala. You know, people were organizing to be a different part of the community at the time. The tribal chairman was a goon squad leader. He targeted people, and his goon squad was in cahoots with the federal government. They were given weapons during the time of Wounded Knee to attack our people. Automatic weapons, APCs, you name it, it's a full military attack on our nation. And all we had was just basic survival. Like, you know, not even guns are 22s, you know. They had the one picture of an AK-47, which, you know, it was just a picture. It never had any ammunition, but I heard. But anyway, so the Ogallala shootout, you know, basically what we were there was helping the community. Leonard, you know, he helped. We did the garden there. We helped the grandma and grandpa for their 50th wedding anniversary. The Jumping Bulls, they just celebrated. They had a big, you know, celebration there. The guys were security because, you know, people had to protect themselves, and nobody ever knew who was going to come and attack at that time. They always had the goon squads, you name it. You know, we were attacked.
I mentioned, I was thinking it was Reagan was president then, but it would actually have been President Ford when that occurred. So, Kevin, you got involved in representing him after you left the judicial bench.
Right.
Tell us, give us a summary of the case, and why are you convinced that he is innocent?
Yeah, there are a couple of things about this, and not just that he is innocent, although that is huge. And I'm involved with Innocence Project. But I became involved after I stepped down off the federal bench. I actually spent some time representing a criminal defendant who had been in front of me that I had been forced to sentence to a life term for a nonviolent drug offense. And that was not justice. And I stepped down from the bench and started helping to get his clemency, which we were ultimately successful. President Trump signed those papers his last day in office. But part of what happened was that Kim Kardashian saw that story and became involved in it and helped us get this story into the White House. When Kim Kardashian is involved in something, that in and of itself becomes a huge story. And that story, which for a brief period of time, you know, the story was Kim Kardashian meets with President Trump and, oh yeah, there was this former federal judge who was with her. As that story circulated, someone saw that and who was a supporter of Leonard's and thought this is a good, maybe the right person, good opportunity to get this story in front of a former federal judge who understands the system and has a heart for justice, particularly wrongful convictions and overly harsh sentences. So when I got his file and started going through it, I'm looking at this as a former federal judge. My perspective is of someone who had taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution, just as the prosecutors and federal agents had done in that case. And as I'm looking through it, what keeps jumping off page after page of transcripts or written opinions from the courts and newspaper articles is the level of misconduct, the hidden exculpatory evidence, the threatened and intimidated witnesses, a juror who had a professed bias and prejudice against Native Americans. All those things were jumping off at me, and I'm looking at that as someone whose life had been spent, you know, supporting this Constitution. And that so disturbed me that I contacted this person and said, look, you get in touch with Leonard, tell him I'm going to take this case on. It's pro bono. We need to correct this. And that's how I ended up here. The misconduct and the constitutional violations were just open and obvious. And even the prosecutor in the case eventually said, we don't know who killed the agents. They don't know. And they never knew. And so what they did to get the conviction was to fabricate evidence. And that's how we ended up here. Now, when they got caught years later, they changed their story. Okay, he didn't shoot them, right? Now it's not just me saying he's innocent of shooting them. The prosecutor says he is innocent of shooting them. We don't know who did it. We can't prove he did it or that anyone did it. So they changed their story to one of aiding and abetting. He was there. Yes, he was there along with about 40 other people when unmarked cars, plainclothes individuals start coming up the road in a place like Gene described that was the reign of terror. It's a powder keg and somebody is going to start shooting. And it wasn't just these agents that were killed. It was a young boy named Joe Stunt. He was also killed. Someone shot him in the head. We know that someone was an agent. But we don't know who and we don't know why. Was the agent threatened? Was he just taking a pot shot? Because he could, and these weren't human beings at the same level. So it's those kind of things that so disturbed me that I took this up. There's not much we can do. We can do it with the court cases. But clemency is a real option, and it's one that the president ought to exercise his authority and sign.
Now you referred to him as the longest serving political prisoner. Can you give us a little bit of explanation as to why you perceive him as a political prisoner? And let me, I'm wondering, like, there's a lot of other people who are wrongfully convicted because of misconduct or because of witnesses who lie or whatever. Do you view all of them as political prisoners, or is there something that sets this aside? And we've got about not quite 2 minutes to go until our first break.
Okay, I'll try to make it quick. I think there are two things going on. Political prisoner, that phrase means different things to different people, right? And sometimes it's just because you spoke out. And it just means different things. I think he is clearly a prisoner of politics. It's what keeps him there. It's what made the American Indian movement a target of the federal government as a subversive group in which they ran as part of COINTELPRO counterintelligence against that group. He was set up to take the fall in the trial for the shooting because the first two his co-defendants were acquitted based on self-defense, and there was only Leonard left. And so they had to make sure they got conviction. What keeps him there is what I call being a prisoner of politics. It's just the politics of someone, that someone being the president of the United States, signing the paper and granting clemency.
All right.
That is tough to do.
We just have a few seconds left before our first break. If I understand you right, when the FBI approached the reservation, they were all in unmarked vehicles so that the people on the reservation did not know they were FBI agents. Is that correct?
That's right. But Gene, and particularly Jean can best answer that question. She was there that day.
Okay, so we'll get a break for our first break. And when we come back, we will return with Lenny Foster, Kevin Sharp, and Gene Roach talking about Leonard Peltier. Stay with us.
You're in tune to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We'll be back in about 4 minutes.
KKFI would like to thank Buffalo State Pizza for feeding our volunteers during this fun drive. Buffalo State Pizza is located in the Crossroads at 1815 Wyandotte Street, Kansas City, Missouri. You can also find them online at buffalostatepizza.com.
This is Victor Wooten here at KKFI 90.1 FM.
A lot of the times when we're listening to the radio, we're kind of only thinking about it from the listener's standpoint, which makes a lot of sense. But from the musician's standpoint, from the record maker's standpoint, I just want to point out how important it is to have stations like this. So I just want to say that I appreciate the listeners, too, for supporting a radio station like this, because this radio station is actually supporting the people that make the music. It's a two-way street. People don't have music to listen to unless we make it. We don't have an audience. I can't feed my kids unless people listen and support my music. We need radio stations to play it, but the one thing I do know is I can't fit into it and maintain without the public. without fans, without listeners, and how to get my music to the public is people like you right here in this station. So it's like we have a team here, and I appreciate everybody for being a part of that team. Hey, everybody, this is Victor Wooten. You and I are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
Now the calendar for the week of February 7th. You can find Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense events at momsdemandaction.org. These are open to all, mothers and others. The Missouri statewide virtual meeting is 7:30 p.m. Thursday, February 10th. Moore Square invites you to register to attend a metro-wide community meeting on January 22nd. It's only time to register now. You can join faith and community leaders, elected officials, and 1,000 concerned metro area voters at this important meeting to lift up the pressing issues of racial and economic justice. Register to attend live at St. James Methodist Church or remotely via Zoom. More info at moresquare.org. Monday, February 7th at 3 p.m., an online event, Monday Meets, Get to Know the Willow Domestic Violence Center, Facebook Live. Monday, February 7th, 6 p.m., Moore Square Issues to Action Meeting will be online. More info at moresquare.org. Monday, February 7th, 6:45 p.m., Kansas City Criminal Justice Task Force will be meeting via conference call. If you'd like to join in, you can call 605-313-5573, and when asked for the code, enter 454-777. Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, KC Chapter, will not hold a monthly meeting in February. Friday, February 11th at 11 a.m. is Empower Missouri's Criminal Justice Coalition virtual meeting. Access info at empowermissouri.org. Saturday, February 12th at noon, Mothers of Incarcerated Sons and Daughters meets at the Plexplod Westport Commons to offer information and support. Many leave feeling empowered, not alone, and overwhelmed. A list of services, meals, and hotlines are available at lawrenceprogressivecalendar.blogspot.com. Please take care of yourselves and others. Thanks to all our listeners. Stay close to your dial and stay well. My name is Terry, reminding you these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. And while you're there, don't forget to click that donate button. We thank everyone who called in to support Jaws of Justice this hour. We encourage anyone who didn't, particularly people who have never called in before. It's easy. 888-931-0901. 888-931-0901. Help keep KKFI alive. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you for staying with us. This is Craig Lubo. You are listening to Jaws of Justice. My guest today is Kevin Sharp, Lenny Foster, and Gene Roach, and they are all involved with Leonard Peltier's case in one way or the other. Right before we took the break, Gene, I believe Kevin or Lenny said that they thought you would be the best one to answer that question we talked about before, which is, when the FBI approached, was there any indication to the people on the reservation that those were, in fact, the FBI agents that were coming there?
No, nobody knew. I mean, we're living in a reign of terror. And an unmarked car coming into your, to your area, it could have been a goon squad member. It could have been anybody. Nobody knew who they were. You know, they didn't have no right to really be there on that day. They were supposed to be looking for somebody that stole some cowboy boots. That doesn't make sense to send federal agents in for that reason. So, no, they didn't. Nobody knew that they were there.
All right. And Jane, you're the co-director of the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. So by the name of that, then, is this an international effort that you started?
Yes, it's been going on for, 37 years. 47, I'm sorry. God. And, that's as long as Leonard's been inside the prison. And we've had, we have international support. We have support from our own nations within the United States. There's been a lot of effort. We've been to United Nations. Today we will be having prayer vigils, action rallies all over the world and all over the country here in the United States. So yeah, it's a pretty big effort. We've had support from Amnesty International. They consider Leonard a prisoner of war, maybe, or political prisoner. I'm not sure the exact words. And we have, United Nations has supported us, the International Indian Treaty Council, and numerous tribal entities.
Right. It's really unbelievable the level of support behind this. And Gene's right, right? The tribal communities and the nation are unanimous behind these efforts. But you add to it, the European Union Parliament is behind this effort. Their president came out with a statement, Desmond Tutu, Mother Teresa, Pope Francis, John Lewis before he died was a major supporter, Senator Inouye. It just goes on and on and on. We could spend your show with us running through the list of people who are crying out for clemency. Because it is open and obvious the misconduct. It's time to end this. And it's really time to move beyond that Hoover era FBI that was involved here. And the FBI acknowledges their own troubles during the Hoover years. You're only one director removed from Hoover when this happens. I think for us to move beyond this and start healing the rift that has been created by the federal government, but the indigenous peoples here and the FBI to show that they are not the FBI of J. Edgar Hoover, they need to support this or at the very least get out of the way and let the president make this move. It's critical. And it's why the former U.S. Attorney James Reynolds, who helped prosecute the case, came out over the summer with a very strong letter to the president and said, we never could prove, we didn't have any evidence that Leonard Peltier personally committed any offense at Pine Ridge. We made mistakes and engaged in improper conduct, and it's time to grant clemency to help with the healing that needs to be done. That's unprecedented for a U.S. attorney on the case to come out and say that. That tells us really everything you need to know, but add to it the millions of voices that are out there begging for Leonard's release.
Just so the listeners know, we're using the term clemency, which is what we're seeking. Can you tell the audience a little bit what clemency means? Is it the same as a pardon, or is it different?
So clemency is the broad term for the executives, the president's power, and clemency can take a couple of forms. It can be a pardon, although that is not what we are asking for, because a pardon would say Leonard has committed a crime for which he should be pardoned. There is no evidence that he killed these agents. They know that, and they admit that. His crime, if there was one, they claim was the aiding and abetting. But aiding and abetting whom? His co-defendants were acquitted based on self-defense. Now, the assistant U.S. attorney says, well, I don't know either. Maybe he aided and abetted himself, which is ridiculous and impossible. So he's not asking for a pardon. What we are asking for is clemency in the form of a commuted sentence. Time served. Let's move on. Let's go. And so those are the two forms. Clemency is just an umbrella term for either pardon or commutation.
And are we talking about, in terms of the issue of innocence or guilt, are we saying just that it was self-defense, or are we saying that he didn't shoot any of the bullets that hit the FBI agents?
I think that anybody that was there should be able to get self-defense when you're attacked. People are attacked by the federal agents and shot at. We have a right to shoot back. And anybody that was there should get the same should be able to be not convicted on that same reason. You know, they already proved that, you know, they attacked us. And how can one person not be attacked and the others are all attacked? So it just don't make sense, really. I mean, it's outrageous.
Right. He should have had the ability to put on a defense of self-defense. The first two, his co-defendants, were allowed to do that. The evidence of the reign of terror was allowed to come in. They got to question the witnesses who recanted their testimony because they were threatened and intimidated. And even the Court of Appeals says there's no question that witnesses were threatened and intimidated. There's no question that exculpatory evidence was withheld and he couldn't put on that defense. But look, we've moved beyond that. This is, you got your pound of flesh. Doesn't even matter anymore. It's been 46 years in this. You made a mockery of the Constitution in order to get a conviction. Okay, congratulations. Let's end it. Let me say one more thing. The assistant U.S. attorney gave an interview to Steve Croft in the 90s. And one of the things they had done was submitted a perjured affidavit by a woman named Myrtle Poorbear, saying that she was Leonard's girlfriend and she was there and she saw him do it. Well, that affidavit fell apart. It wasn't true. It was coerced. And Myrtle Poorbear never knew Leonard Peltier. It's just one of the many constitutional violations. But the assistant U.S. attorney is asked about it. And he says, Steve Cross says, did you know about this? And he says, so what if I did? It doesn't bother my conscience one whit. Right? They knew it. In modern times, a lawyer doing something like that would be disbarred. Right? It was get a conviction at any cost. Yes, did I know they were violating the Constitution? Why? Yes, I did. But so what? And that's the position today. Well, it is a so what. It matters. The Constitution matters. And that's why it's time to end this.
We are down to just under 3 minutes. So if each of you could take about 35 seconds maybe and tell us what you would like to leave us with as far as a final thought. Kevin, or Lenny, you can go.
Spirituality is very important for Leonard Peltier's sanity and his humanity. Spiritual practices, including the sweat lodge, the cleansing and purification ceremony, the pipe ceremony, and the talking circle are very, very important for his humanity and his sanity. The sensory deprivation techniques that exist in the United States prison system is very bad for all people that are incarcerated, especially for Leonard Peltier. They target him. Ceremonies are very important for his sanity, and I'd like to just emphasize that. That's why I chose to do that.
All right,
work with him,
Lenny. We do need to give Gene about 20 or 30 seconds to leave a final thought to.
Yeah, I would like to say that, you know, this genocidal treatment's been going on for generations. It's time that, you know, they treat us as humans. You know, we deserve better. Leonard deserves better. He got COVID last week, you know, and he didn't have a booster when other people in the same unit had already gotten a booster. He's a high risk. You know, his medical issues are bad. You know, just come to the table and sign this. If you want to have any kind of recognition and healing within the communities or Native communities, Leonard Pelcher has to be released.
For those who just joined us since after the break, we've been talking to Lenny Foster, Kevin Sharp, and Gene Roach, who are all involved in one way or the other with the Leonard Pelcher case from the famous Pine Ridge situation. And we'll be back next week. And guys, thank you for being with us on. And we'll try to have you on again to talk about some of the broader justice issues on reservations. Thank you.
Here in my prime, what am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it some way, somehow? Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and the guest of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, you can send an email inquiry or comment to kkfi.org/contact. This is Jeff reminding you our outro music is Higher Ground from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with the Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Understanding Israel-Palestine at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike. And at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Ho. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.